today on The Travel Guys.
In the travel news, a story about a robotic suitcase that follows you around the airport. And is it possible that online travel agencies are altering the ratings and rankings of certain hotel properties without telling you?
No, they'd never do that. At 3:20, we'll tell you about a new musical at a small community theater in town featuring the story of Edgar Allan Poe.
I'm live from Puget Sound for the first part of the show, and I'll have a travel update for those headed to Seattle about 3:25.
KFBK Morning News anchor Amy Lewis and her husband Stuart recently visited Rome, Paris, and Amsterdam, and they're going to give us their own humorous, full of great tips spin on traveling to Europe. That's coming up at 3:35.
And finally, at 3:50, we have an amazing interview about what travel along Route 66 might have been like if you were Black, Mexican, or just not a white traveler. Candace C. Taylor from the Green Book Project is our guest for a really interesting interview.
Thanks for joining us. It's a great hour ahead. Keep it here. Welcome to the Travel Guys.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again.
I'm a traveling man.
Riding on the city of New Orleans.
Kicks out on Route 66.
That's entertainment.
Let's go on with the show.
Welcome, my friends, to another edition of the Travel Guys. Mark and Tom, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. I'm Tom Romano in studio here in Sacramento, and through the magic of radio and the magic of all this great technology we have, we've got Mark, live in Puget Sound. Mark, we can hear a little bit of street noise and such in the background. Tell us where you are, what you're up to.
I am in the quaint little Norwegian-style village of Poulsbo, just across Puget Sound. If you took the ferry to Bainbridge Island and then drove about 20 minutes across the Hood Canal, you'd be this lovely little community. I'm actually down on the harbor here, and the town is absolutely packed. It's a perfect day in Washington State, and we're going to talk a little bit more about some of the tourism opportunities and try to give folks a couple little tips if they're headed up this way, which I know a lot of folks from Sacramento make it up to the Pacific Northwest. And, you know, there's the old joke up here, Tom. There's two seasons here, winter and August. So August is occurring right now.
Well, there you go. Well, we got lots to cover today on the show, and at the top of every Travel Guys radio show, we check in with Mark and do the travel news. So with that being said, let's get to it. Mark, what do you got for us today?
Well, Tom, on the headlines there, we talked about, listen, when you're walking through the airport, the one thing, or getting into the airport, the one thing you have to do is you have to pull your suitcase, right? It's great nowadays because we have wheels instead of in the old days when we had to schlep those bags ourselves. But still, even with the wheels, you have to keep track of your suitcase. But now, Tom, a new suitcase that is actually a robot that will follow you around. In other words, you don't have to pull the suitcase. You put a bracelet on and it follows you everywhere you go. How cool is that?
It is. You know, in fact, I don't know if this is the one you're talking about, but there was a news story on TV the other night, and the person was actually riding on top of the suitcase. In other words,
wow.
it would transport you. And here, one add-on to that is they also make a device that you can hook on your belt buckle behind you, and you can hook it to the handle of your suitcase, and your suitcase will tag along or follow you like a tail. Which seems precarious, but, you know. Anyway, what else?
I'm wondering if there's, you know, 300 people in the airport and they've all got one of these things. If the person in their suitcase, the suitcase is supposed to never be at arm's length from you. But I'm thinking about walking through O'Hare Airport or something. And if a lot of people had these things, I was thinking there'd be a little bit of a traffic jam. But if you remember the old Jetsons cartoon, if you remember, they had a housekeeper named Rosie who kind of followed them around and was kind of robotic. Yeah, well, that's kind of sort of what this is. This is still in the development stage. It's on Indiegogo, but it had a $100,000 goal of money raising goal, and they have already surpassed it by a considerable amount. So you can see that there's more than one person on the planet who says, gee, and you know, if you could create a suitcase that I wouldn't have to pull around, I mean, imagine that. You would have all of your hands free in the airport to be able to do whatever you needed to do. All right. The other interesting story that I saw this week is this is really, really kind of bizarre, but it's not too much of a stretch. This came from a website called Travel Technology, and they are talking about the fact that some of the online travel agencies, Expedia and some of those third-party travel agencies, may be intentionally altering the ratings of some of the properties that they advertise online in order to make them look better or worse. In other words, Tom, if you had a property that maybe you were getting a 20% commission on as an online travel agency, and you wanted to drive a lot of people to that instead of the 10% properties,
right,
why, maybe you'd put up better pictures. Maybe you'd put up more pictures. Maybe you'd have more flowery description. Maybe you'd push the complaint posts from people up to the top of the properties that you didn't want to sell, and you'd bury them in the properties that you did. And it appears as though there is some evidence that this may actually be happening, which should be a little disconcerting to people who book travel online and who depend on online ratings to make their buying decisions, because, you know, those ratings, those reviews are only as good as the people who wrote them. And if the people who wrote them don't have any integrity, or if the people who are posting them don't have any integrity in the way that they're being posted, why, then you can see right away very quickly how they could impact the people's buying decisions online. So this is kind of an interesting story. I'm trying to track down the writer who wrote the story, and hopefully we'll have a follow-up in the next couple of weeks. But in the meantime, buyer beware. Online travel agencies may not be giving you the straight scoop. Okay, we've talked for a lot of weeks about the new FAA reauthorization law that gives consumers some benefits. Indeed, it has been signed by the president. Now is law of the land. So the biggest thing for you to remember as a traveler, two things really, is that as a family traveling now, you're entitled, as long as you make your reservations at least 24 hours ahead of time, you're entitled to be able to sit together on the airplane. You can't just show up at the gate and ask for that. But, and also, if bags are delayed, if you haven't received your bags within 10 hours after a domestic flight or 15 after an international flight, make it 12 after a domestic, then you are entitled to a refund for the cost of that checked luggage, which is something that, of course, has made sense all along, but the airlines had to be dragged kicking and screaming into that little bit of common sense, it seems like.
Well, it's about time. Once in a while, you know, we win a battle, a small one here or there. We haven't won the war, but we won that battle.
We did. JetBlue is seeing a tremendous amount. They have created a brand new service to compete with the traditional airlines cross-country service, and it's called Mint. It involves a lie-flat bed in what has traditionally been first class, and it's sold at a price that is about half of what first-class airfares cross-country have traditionally sold at. It's been a huge hit for JetBlue. The reason this is important to people listening to a travel show in Sacramento is because the popularity of this is meaning that it's expanding, and JetBlue is now offering it from several other markets besides just Los Angeles and San Francisco. They're expanding it to Seattle and to San Jose. And wouldn't it be nice if that overnight flight to New York City from Sacramento came with the option of being able to purchase a lay-down accommodation where you could lay down on the plane and sleep all the way to New York City and arrive fresh in the morning and not have to pay what you used to have to pay for a first-class seat on a regular airline. So possibility that some of that type of service might be coming to Sacramento sometime soon.
Well, okay.
Okay, and I think that's about all I got. That's your travel news for today.
Well, all right. Mark Hoffman there live in Puget Sound. Is it a little windy there, Mark?
It's just, there is the nicest little, I have to tell you something, Tom. You know, we in Sacramento all week long, we have just suffered. I mean, suffered is the only word I can give you for 106, 108, 105. It's just miserable. And here today, it's in the mid-70s. There's a light breeze. This is a lovely little spot. I think there probably are a lot of folks from Sacramento who come up to Seattle, and they don't ever get over to this side of Puget Sound. So after the break, and after we talk a little theater stuff, stuff there. Why? We'll talk a little bit about some of the cities that are on this side of Puget Sound and why next time you come up here, it would be good to make a detour and come over here. Just don't come on a weekend in August.
By the way, if you go to travelguysradio.com, a link to all the things that we're going to be talking about today and every week on our show, you can find there, travelguysradio.com. Coming up in about 3.5 minutes, we're going to visit a little theater right down there on V Street here in Sacramento that you may not have heard of. If you're an Edgar Allan Poe fan, you're going to want to stick around. We've got a great story coming up. It's the Green Valley Theater, and it's next here on The Travel Guys.
In my mind, I'm gone to Carolina.
We're the Travel Guys, Tom and Mark, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Good Sunday afternoon to you. It's time for the Travel Guys entertainment portion of the show. Mark, tell us who we have on the line.
Tom, we have Christopher Cook, who is the artistic director for the Green Valley Theater Company in town. They have a brand new show, in fact, a West Coast premiere all about the life and times of Edgar Allan Poe.
It's the first production outside of New York. Obviously, the original guys were rocking on it up in Toronto. And then they had a New York run, and now we are lucky enough to bring it to the Sacramento community. It's Nevermore, the imaginary life and mysterious death of Edgar Allan Poe.
So is this a musical, or is it a drama, or how does it play out?
It is very much a musical. It's really, really fantastic music. They sing or speak. A lot of it is in rhythm, in rhyme. It basically takes his life, which was weird enough as it is, and it integrates in very fun and kind of odd creative ways, a lot of his work as well. And so it'll take certain things that are happening in his life and draw parallels between some of his most famous works, Annabelle Lee, The Raven, etc.
Chris, can you tell us where the theater is and how folks can get tickets? And I'm assuming it's a weekend production?
It is a weekend production. We run Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, 8 o'clock, 8 o'clock, and 7 o'clock through the month of August. You can get tickets at www.greenvalleytheater.com, and they are $18. We're one of the cheapest live theaters in town. We have a live orchestra. We have puppets. We do what I would describe for this show, kind of our style that we've chosen to do, is what we call Victorian melodrama. We basically do nothing on stage that you couldn't have done 120 years ago. So we don't do any projections or digital stuff. Everything is done live and cut out and as you like ropes and pulleys.
Fascinating.
If you an opportunity to support a local community theater, the Green Valley Theater Company, and Nevermore, the imaginary life and mysterious death of Edgar Allan Poe, go to travelguysradio.com and we'll have a link for you to the theater and you can get tickets and go out and see the musical about Edgar Allan Poe. Chris, thank you for joining us on the Travel Guys.
Thanks so much, guys. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Green Valley Theater, 3823 V Street, Sacramento. The thing I really appreciate and enjoy most about this kind of theater is the live music, you know, like the old Victorian melodrama, you know, some guy sitting on over in the corner on a big pipe organ. Mark, welcome back. Go ahead.
He said they have their own orchestra.
They
so
do.
I'm thinking, here's a community theater, you know, with their own. Obviously, it's not a big orchestra. It makes me want to go just to see what their orchestra is. It's like, you know, this is not the first time that we've given a plug to a community theater group. So we probably should just tell folks who are listening, because for community theaters, it's hard for them to get publicity and to get, you know, little shots on the radio and things like that. So we are happy to do it. And if you just go to travelguysradio.com and you send us a note, we are happy to give you a little bit of exposure and get you on the air and let folks around town know what's going on. And the other reality is that, Tom, is that, you know, for 10 or 15 or 20 bucks, sometimes you can go out and have a wonderful evening and who knows what great new restaurant that you might discover or something like that and make an evening out of it.
Amen to that. I'm Tom Romano here in the KFBK studios. We are the Travel Guys, and Mark Hoffman, Mr. Travel Guy number one, is well up north, Puget Sound. Mark, tell me what takes you to Puget Sound this time of the year, and what is there for folks to do?
Well, Tom, we're at Sports Leisure Vacations. We're gathering, we're recreating a bunch of videos for many of our popular destinations so folks can go online and be able to see where we go, what we do, the places we stay, and the things that we do and the like. So I'm up here with Matt Dockery, one of our videographers, and we're going to be following a tour group that arrives in town tomorrow and heads out to a little Bavarian village called Leavenworth, which is in the mountains here about 2 hours from Seattle. Our group will travel by train, and then one of the things that they're going to do while they're there is they're going to the tourism people in this community haven't picked up on it. It's a Bavarian community called Leavenworth, and they have an outdoor amphitheater. So in the summer, they naturally perform what show? The Sound of Music, of course.
Well, all right. Perfect.
It's just over the mountains from Seattle, so the weather is a little warmer, a little bit more predictable, a little snowier, and perhaps in the winter too. But in the summertime, it's a great destination. We're over here right now today on the other side of Puget Sound. Arrived in Seattle about noon and picked up the rental car. Came downtown, hopped on one of the ferry boats. You know, they're really Puget Sound is if you're going to get around Puget Sound on a highway on land, why it's going to take you a long time to go from point A to point B. If you're going to do it using the ferry boat system, the ferry boats in Seattle are what the subway is to New York City, because the ferry boats are what allow you to crisscross back and forth across Puget Sound and to go to places and get there a lot quicker and a lot more efficiently than you normally would be able to. I have to put a little bit of an asterisk there, because when we got off the ferry boat, Tom, here on Bainbridge Island, and we're driving away from the ferry dock, the folks are lined up to catch the ferry boat back to Seattle this afternoon. And if I told you that the ferry boat line was, maybe half a mile long, that would probably not be an inaccurate description. These folks are, the ferry from Bainbridge runs over to Seattle about every 50 minutes. So some of these folks, it's going to take them probably three boats to get on board. So they're going to be in the ferry lineup for a couple of hours.
So for those that haven't traveled up there, they have a number of ferries that are continuously running, and if it serves me correctly, you take your rental car and just pull it right onto the ferry it goes with you, right?
That's absolutely right. That's the coolest part about the whole thing, is that your vehicle goes with you. So if you were up here with one of my groups, the motor coach goes right onto the ferry boat. In this case, we came right over here to the other side of the Sound. We're in Paulsbo right now, as I mentioned, the Norwegian style community. The Leavenworth guys just decided that they needed a hook, and so because they were named Leavenworth, they were in the mountains, and they kind of went with a Bavarian theme, and a lot of the buildings have been built that way and stuff. This community that I'm in here, this is Norwegian by ancestry. So the folks here, they didn't have to kind of make it up as a tourism gimmick. It's all for real, and they're all here, and there's a wonderful bakery in town, and there are literally, there isn't a parking space to be found anywhere here. Not too far up the road from Paulsbo is Port Townsend, which is an old seaport here in Puget Sound. It's where ships used to dock and cargoes were unloaded, and sailors used to get off from long time at sea and spend their time on the docks and looking for the ladies of the evening and all of those kinds of things. And I'm sure more than one sailor was shanghaied there. But now today, Port Townsend is this wonderful little community on the water's edge with restaurants and shops and a ferry boat across to Whidbey Island. It really is a great place. Have you spent much time up here in the Pacific Northwest, Thomas? Do you have any favorite spots?
Well, I didn't. The Puget Sound, and getting a chance to ride the ferries and, you know, visit some of the I have a friend who lives on a little island that almost no one goes to called Anderson Island. Not much there except for a park and about two houses. But the thing I like most is just the diversity of the weather. I have to ask you, when you travel with your Sports Leisure Travelers, how many times a year do you get up that way? Because I know it's one of your favorite places.
Well, we come up here three or four times a year, Tom. The key is to try to avoid being in the greater Seattle area in August. We have a trip that comes in here tomorrow, and the group will have lunch at a wonderful restaurant near Pike Place Market, and then they'll head over the mountains and get out of town. You know, everybody likes to go to places where the when the weather is the best, and of course that's when all the people come. So the key to a great vacation in the Pacific Northwest, in my mind, is to try to hit here in the shoulder seasons. September is an excellent idea, although I will tell you that the hotel rates up here in some cases for September are higher than they are in August. That's how popular coming after Labor Day has become up here. But even into the first part of October, the weather is pretty dependable. And if you're not somebody who needs 70 degrees and perfect sunshine for your vacation, then gosh, you know, we're only a stone's throw. In fact, I can turn and look to my left here and see some of the mountains from Olympic National Park. This is a state where you can literally sit on a beach and stand on a mountaintop in the same day, in the same afternoon. It really is a great destination. We also should tell folks, we're always trying to make our listeners smarter travelers, so one helpful hint that I would really pass along: if you're coming up here and you're thinking about getting around on the ferry boats, especially if you're traveling on the weekend, but even any time in the summer, ferry boats are like airplanes and cars and people. They break down every once in a while. Lines get long. There is a wonderful website that the Washington State Ferry System has that you can tap into when you come up here. It'll tell you how many people are waiting in line, how many spaces are available, how long before you'll be able to get on a boat. If you're driving a car, of course, if you're walking on, you can get on any time. So that website is really a huge tool to be able to use. You think of it as the same way you would use a website for a subway system to make sure that the trains are on time. Well, this way is how you make sure that the boats are on time.
Now, wait. Is there an opportunity to buy tickets in advance for the ferry and reserve a spot, particularly if you're driving an automobile?
Excellent question. If you're going to the San Juan Islands, you can make a reservation in advance. And if you're coming back from one of the San Juan Islands, you can do the same thing. And there is one ferry in the system up here that runs with a smaller boat because of the depth of the water it has to cross and the amount of water it draws. And they do allow, that's between Port Townsend and Coopville on Whidbey Island. So there are a couple ferry boats where you can make a reservation, and I would recommend that. Otherwise, I would just recommend trying to avoid being up here on the weekends. If you do, make sure you make your way back to Seattle fairly early in the day. Tom, before we get to the bottom of the hour here, I have a little piece of sports leisure vacations business that I have to take care of. We have a travel card to give away. It is up to $400 because we haven't had a winner for a few weeks, and I have a winner for us here. It is Norma O'Neill, who traveled on a trip to British Columbia to Victoria and Vancouver with us recently. So Norma, if you're listening to the radio, you can claim a $400 travel card by calling the Sports Leisure Vacations office Monday or Tuesday and claiming your prize. So Tom, that's about it from up here in the Pacific Northwest. God, it is just beautiful up here. If you've got a spare day or two or three, we have three airlines that serve Seattle now, so fares to Seattle are fairly reasonable even in the summertime.
Outstanding. Well, good luck with the videos. We'll all be looking forward to seeing them all either on the travelguys.com website or the Sports Leisure website as well. All right, coming up after the break, we sit in with Amy Lewis, our morning anchor here on KFBK with her husband Stuart, and we're going to Europe on The Travel Guys. Travel Guys Mark and Tom here, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations, and as we promised, it's time once again to go to Europe with morning anchor Amy Lewis from KFBK and her lovely husband, Stuart. Welcome to the Travel Guys, kids.
Hi, great to be back.
Nice to have you all once again to tell us about your latest adventure and maybe give us a few little tips that might make folks a little smarter traveler along the way. Welcome back.
Okay, so here's the first tip. Don't go to Amsterdam.
Why? Okay.
Well, on a particular day.
Yeah. Well, okay, on a particular day. No, we had just a real experience for Amsterdam. We'll save that till the end. But our main destinations when we went to Europe this time were Paris, Rome, and Amsterdam. And we had lovely times, really. We always have a great time when we travel together. Let's see, we landed in London and went to?
Then we went to Rome.
Yeah.
Flew over to Rome, got there in the evening. Everything was perfect.
We stayed at the Hotel Hostler, which is just a gorgeous hotel, really in the middle of everything, near the steps.
About 100 yards from the Spanish steps.
And let me ask you something, Amy. Do you tend to pick hotels for their location?
Yes. Yeah, we really do. First of all, we're walking tourists. We don't like to take taxi cabs unless we absolutely have to. We don't like to do bus tours. We don't like to do any sort of tours where we're driven places because I will throw up on people in the buses. So that does not make me very popular. So, yeah, we like to walk everywhere we go. So we do tend to find hotels that are right in the middle of most of the activity in the certain destination.
We kind of plan it based on the tourist attraction we're trying to see in London or in Paris or Rome. And we walk 6 to 8 miles a day.
On average. And sometimes we walk as many as 10 to 12 miles a day. But so, yeah, we went to, in Rome, we went to all of the sites there, Mark and Tom. We went to see the Colosseum and we saw everything that we could see in about a 15-mile radius?
Yeah. You're talking about ideas or what might be important. One thing knew or found out immediately was, especially in Rome with all the cobblestones, that you have to have soft shoes.
Don't wear heels
and don't wear hard-soled shoes.
Yeah.
You know, tennis shoes are best.
Yeah, and we saw, you know what, this is interesting too, because we saw some people, not a lot, some people with walkers and some people with wheelchairs, and they had a tough go of it because most of Rome where we are is cobblestones, and so obviously that does not lend itself to smooth traveling for people in their wheelchairs or with walkers. So it's just something that you have to think about, that maybe you will use cabs maybe in that section of Rome if you're in that sort of situation.
Did you folks venture to the Vatican at all during your stay in Rome?
Okay, so that's probably, for me, in Rome, that was the highlight of our trip. We went to the Vatican, and I think we spent, Mark, about 2 hours there. I mean, we went to, we went through the entire, the church, we walked through the city. We almost made a viewing with the Pope, but we missed it by that much. And a little piece of advice for the women, if you're going to the Vatican, you cannot wear anything that is higher than your knees. In other words, you can't wear shorts and you can't wear a skirt that's above your knees. You have to cover your knees and you cannot have open shoulders. In other words, you have to wear a blouse that covers your shoulders, so like a short sleeve blouse. Otherwise, we saw them turn people away.
Great advice.
Wouldn't that be awful to go all the way to the Vatican and then find out that you had disrespected the...
Yeah, we saw a woman who absolutely was in tears, and they said to her over and over in Italian, but we couldn't understand what they were saying, that you can't come in, we're sorry, these are the rules. And she said, I traveled from another country, I'm here, this is my only time I'll be in the Vatican. And they said, well, then go and get your clothes that you can, or go to a store and
right.
buy something that covers you up.
Anything else we should know about Rome before we head on to Paris?
Fabulous people.
Yeah.
So enjoyable. So nice.
Yeah.
So open.
Not pushy.
So one of the best cities. Compare the Italians to the French.
Oh, okay.
We enjoyed it so much in Rome, and we commented about that, you know, anybody we asked, not just at the hotel, on the streets, vendors, just, you know, obviously there's no language barrier anymore. And it was just so much fun going around because anybody you needed advice from or directions, it was very easy.
Now, for the Parisians, it's a bit of a different story. And I don't know if it's because of where we were or they're just really tired of American tourists. And maybe they've had experience with American tourists who are pushy and mean or rude, but we're not. We try very hard to not be. But their patience with American tourists is not great.
And
we have a sister who lives in the south of France.
And I think what I noticed is that the tourists in Paris Central were different than the tourists in Rome Central. We were right near the Louvre, and you know, we saw all the major sites, and this time we wanted to see some different sites, which really was a 6 mile jaunt walk.
Yeah, we walked to the catacombs and didn't make it and had to walk back. The line was 300 people long.
Some of the tourists are just not as nice as well. So I can appreciate why what Amy's saying, you know, some of the Parisians aren't maybe as friendly or short with their answers. It's just different people, different tourists.
Highlights in Paris.
Oh, my goodness. I the list could go on. Paris is one of my favorite cities. So we love to walk along the Champs-Élysées. We went to Notre Dame. This is our second time going to Paris. The Louvre. There's a beautiful park.
Right out from the Louvre.
Yeah, our hotel was Le Maurice. And it's a beautiful park with a huge Ferris wheel.
Right at the end.
And a very large pond with ducks. And you just get a real taste of Parisians there, because mostly Parisians come, and there are statues throughout the park, and it's just gorgeous.
What we enjoy now, you know, is getting away from seeing some of the sights, but now enjoying the people, yeah, and sitting on the park benches, watching them go by, or having that, you know, experience with a cafe.
Yeah.
Amy and Stuart, how did you go from Rome to Paris to ultimately Amsterdam?
We flew to Rome from London, and then from Rome we flew over, took, you know, British Airways over, and then Amsterdam we took the rail.
Was that a positive experience, the train to Amsterdam?
Absolutely.
Oh,
and then
my
we'll
gosh,
hear what Amy has to say about Amsterdam.
No. We've decided.
I'll tell you what happened in the train when we got to Amsterdam.
Well, no, before we even
got off the train.
The train. We've decided that we want to enjoy taking the train because, honestly, the amount of time.
You've got to watch your bags, though.
You can go right to the train station and get in line and get on versus the security of all the airports and to get to the airport. So the actual time, ground to ground and in air, is less via the train than flying over there.
But you have to watch your bags. You have to watch your bags when you get on the train, and you have to make sure you keep them inside the entire time, and watch out because you're going to get groped.
I could tell Amy was she was just chomping at the bit to get to
Amy,
this project.
Yeah, she was waiting for that one.
As we were getting off the train, we were in a little bit of a scrum as people were trying to get off, and this man from Amsterdam was standing behind us, and this other gentleman was trying to get his bag off, and he wasn't getting it off as quickly as possible, and the guy from Amsterdam was getting very impatient, and I looked at him and I said, he's gonna get off in just a second, and that's when he put his hand on my butt.
He was trying to move you along.
I guess it was not a happy experience, and that was just the beginning of Amsterdam. We got off the train to find our hotel.
Hold on just a second. Hold on before you. I got to let our listeners know we're talking with Amy Lewis, morning anchor KFBK, and her best guy Stuart.
Best
okay,
guy,
continue
sure.
on.
So let's back up a little bit. So we landed in Rome, 75-80 degrees. We get to Paris. We knew the weather was going to change, 55 degrees Fahrenheit, and then we get to Amsterdam and it's hailing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's really cold. It's about 42 degrees outside, and we didn't have jackets, but that's because we're not very smart. But we stayed at a nice hotel. We liked the Grand very much.
Amsterdam has been known for forever, for at least the last in the last generation or so, as the place where Europe goes to party. I mean, there are ladies of the evening on display, and you can smoke your pot, and people are pretty tolerant there. Did you find that to be still the case?
Tell them the delineation of coffee versus cafe.
A coffee shop is where you go to get marijuana, and a cafe is where you go to get coffee.
Yeah.
And for King's Day, it was, you know, of a city of, I guess it's 500,000, you know, they had 700,000 plus come into the city. All the canals were packed, and it was shoulder to shoulder.
People.
Arm to arm, people.
Drunks.
Slowly moving, a sea of people trying to get back to your hotel, and no cabs, no transportation runs in the city on that day. But what was amazing, the nice part about it was that by 6 or 7 o'clock that evening, it was over. And
was
the next
done.
Morning, I mean, it was not like an American New Orleans.
Yeah, oh yeah. You know, where they
Mardi Gras. It's not like Mardi Gras all night and all day.
And one other thing, too, when you're talking about the red light district, we did not go specifically to end up in the red light district, but we're walking around and found ourselves there. And I will tell you, as a journalist, they do not like it when you put your video camera out and start to videotape the ladies who are knocking. And I literally, Mark, it's this. Come over here. Come over here. And as we walked down there and the woman looked at me holding my phone up like this, Tom, videotaping, they said, put that down, and got one of the big old guys to come over and take my phone away.
Thank goodness
I had my husband, because he was like, no, we'll leave. But yeah, they
Tom,
do not
we,
like
we,
it.
We almost lost the morning news anchor in Amsterdam over. I can see the headlines.
You are not far from the truth, my friend.
So your visit to Amsterdam, which is generally a very tolerant and friendly city, at least the people in Amsterdam speak very good English.
It's not that we didn't like Amsterdam. I just don't think we were ready for what we should have been ready for.
There you go.
Go in the spring when the tulips are blooming.
Exactly.
Lovely time to go. A little cool still. Right. People have to understand. It's kind of like fall colors in the United States, you know, anywhere in the country. The leaves turn color when the weather starts to change. Well, the tulips come out when the weather starts to warm up.
And if you take the train, protect your tush.
Yeah, your stuff too, but especially your tush. Amy and Stuart, thank you both for this wonderful travelogue that you have given us through three great cities, along with some do's and don'ts and some of your personal adventures. It's been fun.
You will always hear the raw from Amy and Stuart. It's a guarantee.
Awesome. All right. Stuart Lewis, Amy Lewis, morning anchor, KFBK here with us. We are the Travel Guys, and coming up in about 3.5 minutes, some information about the famous Route 66 that even the most seasoned traveler may not know about. That's next here on KFBK. Welcome, everyone. You have tuned into the Travel Guys every Sunday, 3 to 4 o'clock, right here on KFBK. Mark and Tom, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Mark, you have rounded up a very, very interesting guest for us today, being a Route 66 traveler for many, many years. Tell us how you found out about our guests and what this is all about for today.
Well, I stumbled onto our guest by way of an AP writer who had done a story about a project that she's working on. And as someone who had traveled Route 66 for many years, I've taken a number of groups out on the highway, have a lot of friends out there. Never dawned on me, Tom, that, you know, I'm a Caucasian guy, and maybe that people who weren't the same, didn't have the same color skin as I did, might not have had the same experience out on that old highway as it wound through the different states and made its way from Chicago to Los Angeles or vice versa. And we have a lady here who has, you asked me, you know, what will make people smarter travelers from this interview? I think, I don't know that they'll be smarter, but they'll definitely be more informed and more aware maybe of something that they weren't aware of beforehand. Candace C. Taylor, she is part of a thing called the Green Book Project. And Candace C., welcome to the Travel Guys.
Thank you.
And explain to our listeners, if you would, in brief, what the Green Book Project is and how it relates to Route 66.
Okay, well, the Green Book was a historic travel guide that was published for Black people during Jim Crow. So it started publication in 1936 to 1966, and it was published by a man named Victor H. Green. So that, you know, it was an incredible, resourceful, innovative solution to the horrific problem of racial segregation that was happening in America at the time. And I'm working on a project that it's a multidisciplinary project that will eventually become an exhibit and a virtual reality platform and a map. So I stumbled onto the project kind of by accident. I was writing a travel guide for Route 66 for the Moon series, Avalon Travel series. And I, being a Black woman and being a travel writer and a cultural documentarian for almost 20 years, I just wondered, you know, the same narrative that we see in regards to Route 66, which is the, you know, middle-class white suburban family who jumps in their Airstream trailer and all the nostalgia that's associated with that. I felt like, you know, there had to be more to the story. So when I looked a little deeper, and I did find this Negro Motorist Green Book, that, by the way, was a national guide, but it was widely used on Route 66 because Route 66 was just a popular tourist and travel destination.
Now, Candace, this book was put out, in essence, to help Black travelers stay out of trouble. I mean, not only to find the places that were friendly to them, but to also help them avoid the places that were unfriendly to them, yes?
Well, it was really more of a guide that showed you where you could go.
Okay.
It didn't clearly outline where you shouldn't or couldn't go, but it was assumed, especially if you were Black at that time, that most places were not going to be welcoming to you. You know, the reality of the situation, especially, you know, once you left the Jim Crow South, we assumed that the West and the North was somehow more liberated.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth is, you know, it wasn't. Jim Crow had no borders. So as you moved westward or north, you ran into a lot of the same problems. And sometimes it was even worse because there were no signs. Discrimination was still in full force. So the signs actually helped give you information that you really needed. Another issue on Route 66, you know, that was not just particular to Route 66, but another major issue is that there were sundown towns throughout the country. I don't know if your readers know what sundown, if your listeners know what sundown towns are, but they were all white communities that were all white on purpose. And James Lowen has done some incredible research, and he wrote a book called Sundown Towns, if you want to learn more about them. And they were essentially, like, you could not be in the town and be black after 6 p.m. And if you were found in the town after 6 p.m., there were serious consequences. Lynchings, you know, harassment, death. I mean, it was really, it was not just that it was dangerous. It was life-threatening. And, you know, some sundown towns would have signs right at the county line, you know, saying, nigger, don't let the sun go down on you here. There were other towns that would just ring a bell at 6 p.m. and you would know if you're black that you had to leave. Again, if you were traveling, you know, this, as you know, when you're on a road trip, you're just exploring something for the first time. Everything is new. You don't know that community. You don't know the area. So it was really critical, you know, that Route 66 in particular, out of the 89 counties that lined Route 66, 44 of them were sundown towns.
Wow. Wow. That's amazing. We're talking with Candace C. Taylor. Candace is a part of a thing called the Green Book Project. We're talking about Route 66 and how difficult or how much fun it was or how many kicks you got on Route 66 as opposed to how many times you got kicked on Route 66. Might have had something to do with the color of your skin. It seems kind of ironic, Candace, as you pointed out here, that the man who sung the very popular song about getting your kicks on the old highway was an African-American man who wouldn't have been welcome in many of the places that he was talking about getting his kicks on.
Yeah, absolutely. Nat King Cole, ironically, was shut out of many places on Route 66. And, you know, it was indicative. It was the reality that we were all dealing with in America. But, yeah, it is kind of a bitter irony, isn't it?
You know, you mentioned a little while ago about the project that you're working on is going to be somewhat of a multimedia exhibit. Now, is it going to be a something that is going to be in one locale, or is it going to travel? Tell us more about that.
Well, we're basically in the early stages of putting it together. I've had several meetings with sites, the Smithsonian. So we're talking about developing it, that it would tour for 3 to 5 years. Starting sometime hopefully in about 2018, 2019. So for the next year, I just received a grant from the Schomburg. It's a New York Public Library that's based in New York mm-hmm. City. And they have the largest collection of green books in the country. They've digitized actually 22 editions. So if your listeners want to actually see what the green book looked like, it was a pretty amazing document. I mean, it had, you know, there were articles about different cities. It told you, you know, places to go and things to see. You know, it wasn't just like a AAA. Some people say it was a AAA for black people, but, you know, there were all kinds of, like, department stores, doctor services, taverns. There were all kinds of things that were listed in the Green Book. So I'm excited to, you know, to have that, to get this fellowship to go to New York and really look at their archive.
Well, and Candace, it impresses me at this point that the National Park Service, as I'm sure you're aware, is talking very heavily about making Route 66 a national monument, a national park. I'm not sure exactly how that will work because there is no national park that stretches quite the way Route 66 does across a good part of the country. This is absolutely a part of this story that has to be told. You know, Route 66 impresses me. It's a fun place. Get your kicks on Route 66. You're traveling. You're seeing places you haven't seen before. You get to the western side of the country. There's all these amazing shapes of the landscape and national parks and the Grand Canyon. And this is a story that really hasn't been told. And I've traveled up and down the road for a quarter century, and I've been in all the museums, and I've been in places where people have their memorabilia and stuff like that. And it now strikes me profoundly that it's an all-white history. It's an all-white story that's been told, and it wasn't an all-white story. And so it's incredibly important, I think, to the history of the highway and for folks to be able to see the whole picture of what you're doing. I just am amazed by it, and I have a great deal of respect for you, and I really wish you well in your journey of discovery, because I think that this is really a wonderful story.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate that, you know, that you even came to that realization, because I think, you know, there's a reason why Black people aren't nostalgic about Route 66, the nation's favorite highway. We just have a different relationship to it. But I think that's not to say that the Green Book was, like I said, this resourceful, innovative guide. It was the solution to that problem. So, you know, Green Book was written in the spirit of, like, you too can experience America.
Mr. Green was a Harlem postal worker. Do you know the backstory there at all, quickly? Why did he decide to write this book?
Well, he was tired of getting, you know, cold shoulders and not feeling welcome in certain areas, even in Harlem or even in his native, you know, in New York City.
Right.
So the Green Book started. The first edition, 1936, was just, you know, Westchester County and New York City. So it has the largest cluster of Green Book sites. There's about 350 just in Harlem, the Bronx, and Brooklyn. So it was, you know, something that he was really developing for his own community, and it just grew. But because he was a postal worker, he knew other postal workers throughout the country. And then they, you know, he would have them take Green Books on their route, and they would sell advertising to
them. Ah, there you go. Because postal
That's
workers got
worked.
Around. There you go. Yeah, that makes sense. Candacy, I really thank you for your time today. We are on TravelGuysRadio.com. You will find a link so that you can go and find out some more about this amazing story, this amazing project. If you are a fan of old highways, I'm sure that you will find it to be of great interest. Candacy, thank you very much for your time on the Travel Guys today.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Remember now, everything that you hear on the Travel Guys Radio show, you can find links to at TravelGuysRadio.com. Well, that about wraps it up for a fabulous Sunday. Mark, any final words?
Goodbye from everybody from Puget Sound. Come on up to the Pacific Northwest. It is truly the greatest vacation spot in the country.
See you next Sunday, 3 o'clock, for the next edition of the Travel Guys.